evening, everyone. I thought we'd talk about developing compassion tonight. Kisa Gotami was beyond consolation. On her hip, she carried the body of her dead son, a toddler. She'd go around the town asking people, "Can you help my child? Can you help me help my child? He's asleep, he won't wake up." Some were sympathetic. "Kisa Gotami, your son's dead. He won't wake up." Some thought she was mad. In the end, she stumbled across the Buddha. "Will you help me? Will you help me?" The Buddha said, "Yes, Kisa Gotami, I'll help you. What I'd like you to do is go back into town and go knocking on the doors. And I want you to collect mustard seeds." "Okay," said Kisa Gotami, "I can do that. But Kisa Gotami, there is one other point. It has to be mustard seeds from a house that has not known death." Kisa Gotami, probably thinking that these mustard seeds would be used in some kind of magic ritual, went off to collect the mustard seeds. At the first house, she knocked on the door, someone answered. She told her story. "Kisa Gotami, I have so many mustard seeds I could give you, but we can't help, there's been a death in this household." Kisa Gotami went to another house, but the same thing happened. "No, there's been a death in this household." And the third house, "No, sorry, Kisa Gotami, there's been a death in this household." The fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, the ninth, the tenth, the 11th. Exactly the same result. Eventually, Kisa Gotami sobered up. No matter how many doors she was going to knock on, the answer was going to be the same. Death is universal. Suffering is universal. She attended to the body of her child, seeing that the funeral rites were observed, and then went back to the Buddha and asked for instruction in the teaching that leads to the cessation of suffering. In this moving story, the Buddha combines two elements which are always associated with enlightenment: wisdom and compassion. Everyone said no to Kisa Gotami, except the Buddha. He said, "Yes, I can help." That's compassion. Wisdom, however, was seeing beneath the surface. Everyone else saw Kisa Gotami's problem as being her dead child, and it was an irresolvable problem. But the Buddha knew what was really wrong was Kisa Gotami's outlook. The problem wasn't the death of the child. It doesn't mean to say that it's not a terrible event and doesn't lead to grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain and despair. It most certainly does. But that wasn't Kisa Gotami's suffering. It was that she couldn't accept what had happened. Life should have been different. There was resistance, intense resistance, and it was sending her mad. The Buddha's understanding of that, his seeing that, what the real problem was, seeing beneath the surface, that's wisdom. What I'd like to do tonight is talk about the compassion element. What it is, how it's developed, the benefits that are accrued from developing compassion, and the strong link between compassion and wisdom. So what is compassion? It's actually incredibly simple. Compassion is simply the wish for all beings, including ourselves, to be free of suffering. It's no more than that. It's just the mental attitude that is imbued with that wish, the wish that all beings be free of suffering. Now, being a mental attitude, it can be developed. It is possible to develop a compassionate attitude. So you can be a person who feels perhaps that they don't have very much of it at all. But with work, you can actually develop a skill in compassion. So what I'd like to do now is set out a practice. We don't often hear about the practice of compassion, but it might be useful for you to know that there is a meditation practice that you can actually develop. And the practice runs along very similar lines to that of loving kindness, but with some very different additions. Now, of all meditation practices, it's very important that before we begin, we set up the practice properly, that you map out what it is that you intend to do before you do it. So I'll run through the practice of compassion, map it out for you. The first thing we need to do is to reflect on the drawbacks of cruelty. We then reflect on the benefits of developing compassion. We then develop compassion towards ourselves. And I put in a pause there for emphasis. We develop compassion towards ourselves first. It's vitally important. We then develop compassion to a being whose suffering is obvious. Then a friend. Then a neutral person, and then someone with whom we have difficulties, a hostile person, people we find irksome perhaps. So before you begin the practice, it's good to reflect on who it is that you're going to send the compassion towards, who you're going to develop it towards. Map out the practice before you begin. Now, the drawbacks of cruelty need to be looked at. Cruelty is the opposite of compassion. If compassion is the wish for beings to be free of suffering, cruelty is the wish to harm. Compassion is a brahmavihara in the Pali. It means divine abiding. It's a heavenly state to find yourself in. Cruelty is a hell's abiding. To act in cruel ways leads to further pain and suffering for the individual and for other people. It increases our self-concern. It leads to fear, defensiveness, and an extreme sense of separation from your world. It also helps to remember personal experiences. We're all a mixture of dark and bright states. We can all look into the past and recognize mistakes that we've made. Perhaps there are occasions in the past when we did act cruelly. What is it they say? Every sinner has a future, every saint has a past. We're all a mixture. We all try things out because what we're trying to do is to find out what works and what doesn't work. Now, it may be helpful to remember an occasion when we were cruel. The odds are at that time we will experience a painful feeling. If we do, then we can connect cruelty to the resultant painful feeling. Then we understand why cruelty is such a bad idea. It makes it a bit more real. The next thing to do is to develop or to reflect on the benefits of compassion. I don't want to go into this into too much detail because they're the same benefits for loving kindness that were talked about 2 weeks ago, so I don't want to go over the same ground particularly. But essentially, if you reflect on the benefits of compassion, really it's that life will become happier here and now, and you can look forward to a bright future. Now, the first person that you need to, or the first being that you need to develop compassion towards is yourself, ourselves. Alan recently said, I've got a quote from Alan, which I think really sums it up. As part of the training, all meditators must develop compassion towards themselves. Recognize that for all your failings and failures, and that includes the expansive conceits as well as the self-denigration, for all of those things, nevertheless, you are only human, with your own burden of kamma and vipaka, and the conditioning goes back lifetime upon lifetime upon lifetime, and it couldn't be any other way. Yes, those things are unpleasant, uncomfortable, the results of past inefficient behavior, but you don't have to act on them now. We are all fragile human beings, and it can't be any other way. It's good to reflect, say, when practicing Vipassana meditation, and it's getting tough, and we're being hard on ourselves because it's not the way we think it ought to be, or we're discovering states within ourselves that we didn't know we had and didn't particularly want to know that we had. That's the time for compassion towards yourself. Realizing that you're human, we're all a mixture of bright and dark states, and really it couldn't be any other way. Now, there are two components to the actual meditation. There's connecting with the being that you're going to send compassion towards, and then there is the wish itself, the wish that they be free of suffering. Now, compassion connects to the other person by looking at the fact of their suffering. There isn't anyone in this world, apart from enlightened beings, who don't suffer. Everyone suffers. Now, when you go on to the person who obviously suffers, it's not too difficult to find their suffering and connect with what's going on. They may be dying. They may be suffering from terrible diseases like anorexia or obesity, perhaps. Yeah. And it's very easy to see what their problem is and develop compassionate feeling towards them. A friend, similarly, if they're personally known to you, then you'll probably know that they suffer. They can't get what they want, or they're going through difficulties, relationship difficulties. There's so much to suffering. I'm sure with a friend it's not too difficult to connect with the fact of their suffering. With a neutral person, it might get a little bit more difficult, a neutral being. Here it might be useful if you've actually memorized the First Noble Truth, of the Four Noble Truths, the fact of suffering. Life is suffering. It goes, birth is suffering, aging is suffering, decay is suffering, death is suffering. Grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and despair are suffering. Being united with the unloved is suffering. Being disunited from the loved is suffering. Not to get what one wants is suffering. In short, the five groups of grasping are suffering. Now, if you apply that template, shall we call it, to an individual, you can say, well, yeah, the very fact that someone's born means that they have to feed themselves. We have a lifetime ahead of us of feeding ourselves just in order to experience life. And that's dukkha. We have to go to work, etc., etc., etc. So even with a neutral person, someone not personally known to you, it is possible to connect with the fact of their suffering. Now, the other aspect is then to wish that that person be free of suffering. And I've just written something down there as a suggestion. But I think what happens is you develop your own particular style. May this being be free of suffering. May they be free of enmity, affliction, and anxiety. May no harm come to them. May the devas protect them and keep them safe. May they be free from hindrances, from all mental defilements, from all greed, hatred, confusion, and delusion. May they obtain their heart's desire, release from all suffering, nibbana. Now, it's also possible to use visualizations. So you actually visualize the person that you're intending to send this wish to. And some people, I know one person who creates this kind of luminous egg effect around the person, full of light, and directs the compassion. And as the compassion goes towards them, they recognize their countenance, they see the countenance of the person that they're directing it towards, and they're peaceful, and at that time, free of suffering. Now, there's one thing we have to be very careful of here. Well, there are two things that we have to be very careful of here. The first is the near enemy of compassion, which is falling into self-pity. If you find yourself becoming distressed by the images that are being conjured up, then you are identifying with the suffering and you're falling into pity. Success in arousing compassion is being able to dwell on the chosen object, the person, with an undisturbed mind. Compassion is not feeling terrible because someone is in trouble. That's not compassion. Compassion is the wish that they come to the end of suffering, but not in a way that causes us to feel upset. So if you find that you're becoming attached, you're identifying with that person, that person's suffering, then you need to practice equanimity, upekkha in the Pali. Equanimity is observing the fact that all beings fare along according to their deeds. What we are today is an outcome of all our yesterdays, and what we are tomorrow is dependent on how we behave now. So, for instance, developing the quality of compassion will lead to happiness now and in the future. So whatever it is that somebody's going through, in a sense you can say they've chosen it. That helps to balance the mind out, keep it even-minded, and then you can continue with the practice. The other enemy of compassion is the far enemy, which is cruelty, which we've looked at briefly. So when you come on to the difficult person, it might be that it may be somebody who stole your credit cards and went and used them. A very good person to practice towards. But the danger is, of course, that it might turn into cruelty. You might actually wish, far from wishing them compassion, you may wish that they get it. But if you're really, truly interested in developing compassion, then think about what that person's done. They've acted inefficiently, and they will experience painful feelings because of their inefficient deed. So they're a blessing, actually, because they give us the opportunity to practice compassion. It may help. There are lists of ways of overcoming hatred. But this is the rub, you know, with compassion. Is it possible to think in compassionate terms to somebody who you believe has wronged you? If you can really develop that feeling of compassion towards that person, then you've broken the barrier of compassion. You've got through that major stumbling block. No one is exempt from experiencing the results of their actions, both good and bad. So what does it feel like? What does a developed mind feel like if you undertake a course of training in compassion? One aspect is how gentle the mind becomes. There becomes a real awareness of human fragility, how fragile we are, how easily we bruise. It is all tied up with understanding that what we experience, other people experience. The joy I experience is no different from the joy you experience. The heartbreak I feel is no different from the heartbreak you feel. That's what compassion brings. That's what looking at the fact of suffering brings, an appreciation that we all suffer. We all go through grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain and despair. There isn't anyone who doesn't. The mind is also spacious. The actual feeling with loving kindness, I don't know if you noticed, but loving kindness, the feeling tends to come from the heart. With compassion, it tends to be a little bit further up. It's kind of here. And it's a very spacious feeling. It kind of just opens up here like that. It almost feels like you could hold a child's head right just there. It's that kind of feeling. It's very non-judgmental. Increasingly, you find that being judgmental is based on not seeing the person's suffering. You only see the outer layer, if you like. You see the arrogance of that person you work with. You don't necessarily see that arrogance may be trying to hide a real sense of low self-esteem. But if you develop compassion, then you find that judgmentalism subsides, because you see that actually their arrogance is an attempt to hide something they don't want you to see. And there's no need for... Increasingly, there's no need to protect yourself. There's a beautiful story in the Pali Canon of the Buddha going to meditate in a cave that was haunted by a yaka. Now, a yaka is a... Well, I'm not actually quite sure what a yaka is. It's something like a demonic goblin. They're very bad-tempered, but they do have the facility for spiritual transformation if they so desire. Now, this story goes that the Buddha was... The yaka wanted to test the Buddha, so the yaka demanded, "Get out, recluse," and the Buddha said, "Yes, friend," and left. Then once he was outside, the yaka said, "Go back in, recluse," and the Buddha complied. He said, "Yes, friend," and walked back in. The yaka went, "Get out, recluse," the Buddha said, "Yes, friend," and walked out. The yaka said, "Get back in, recluse." The Buddha said, "Yes, friend," went back in. The yaka said, "Get out, recluse." The Buddha said, "Yes, friend," and walked out. The yaka said, "Go back in, recluse." The Buddha said, "Yes, friend," and went back in. The yaka said, "Get out, recluse." The Buddha said, "No, friend, you have to do whatever you want. I'm not moving." At this point, the yaka's heart must have softened a little bit. He said, "I'm going to ask you some riddles. If you don't know the answers, I'm going to drive you insane, or I'm going to split open your heart, or I'm going to grab you by the ankles and throw you across the Ganges." The Buddha said, "Yaka, I know of no man or no god that could drive me insane, split open my heart, or grab me by the ankles and throw me over the Ganges. But ask your questions and I'll answer." The yaka asked him lots of questions, lots of riddles, and the yaka was amazed with the brilliance of the Buddha's answers. So much so that apparently from that moment on he went from town to town to village extolling the Buddha's virtues and this wonderful dhamma. Now what that story says to me was that when you have that gentleness, that spaciousness, that ability to accommodate other people's raucous behavior, if I can put it like that, then it's you don't need that protection, you don't need those defensive measures. You can rest open and just experience what's happening. And in doing so, you diffuse that person's anger, their distress, whatever it might be. And then you can enter into negotiations with them. Once they have, as it were, dispelled that initial intensity. Another aspect is that you develop a healthy ego. You haven't got rid of self-concern, but it is substantially reduced through developing this quality of compassion. And with a reduction of self-concern, hindrances are set aside more easily. So it benefits the meditation. How does compassion combine with wisdom? What is wisdom? Wisdom is seeing deeply into one's own suffering, the reality of one's own suffering, but also the processes behind it and how to bring it to an end. So essentially, you could say the deepest wisdom possible is the complete understanding of the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering, that there's a cause of suffering, there is release from all suffering, and there is a path that leads there. To develop wisdom, we practice Vipassana meditation, the meditation on the three marks of transience, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. Suffering always arises through resisting life's natural flow, which includes painful feelings, grief, sorrow, despair, as well as joy, loving kindness, compassion, happiness, success, etc. Take Kisagotomi as an example. The death of her child brought unavoidable grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and despair. It does. Her difficulty was her passionate desire for life to be different. She had a description of the world, and reality had gone and changed the description and said, no, it's not like that, it's different, it's like this. And poor Kisagotomi couldn't accept it, so she suffered. Her problem was not understanding the way life really is. Life is really transient, unsatisfactory, and non-self. That flow of experience that's forever going on that you see in the meditation, that you look directly at the meditation, everything that you look at is transient, unsatisfactory, and uncontrollable, impersonal. Really, with Vipassana, what we have to do is make the connection between our description of the way we think the world is and the reality that we see when we choose to practice insight meditation. And what happens over time is that our description ceases to think in terms of permanent things. It's more and more, it's overtaken with the deep knowledge for your own personal experience that things are transient. And so it becomes increasingly difficult not to accept the evidence that life offers of the way it really is. The third noble truth of the cessation of suffering comes through ceasing to manipulate or resisting the way things are. And how are things really? There is grief, there is sorrow, there is pain, there is... if somebody dies, we go through a grieving process, don't we? That's perfectly natural and normal. There isn't anything wrong with that at all. The problem only arises if we resist. If, say, our description of the world says, I'm a Buddhist meditator, therefore I should never have to experience grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and despair, then we deny the natural process of the grieving, because we insist that it shouldn't be like that in our description. But if we let go of the wrong description for seeing that things are transient, unsatisfactory, and non-self, it just happens. You just go through it, and at the end, you go, well, time to start life again. Got to carry on. And it's possible for the grieving process to be curtailed dramatically if we resist, if we stop resisting the way life is. So, what we find is, as the insight develops, is that more and more often we're in a space where there is no actual suffering. We have an uncluttered mind. Our description of the world is put to one side more and more often because we see that all descriptions are false. And we just exist with life as it truly is, without that craving for it to be different in any way. When we do that, when we take our descriptions less seriously, when we're left with a clear, uncluttered mind, we see more and more clearly the suffering in others. It becomes painfully obvious when somebody else is suffering, when somebody else is resisting like mad. It becomes, as you go on, it becomes more and more obvious. And you find, to your amazement, that you know why. You know exactly why. It's because they're resisting. You can see that it's the second noble truth. They can't accept that life is as it is. They want their life to somehow conform to their expectations, and they're suffering. So as you progress in the Vipassana, your compassion develops, because you see that it's completely unnecessary. If only they just stop resisting and just accept life as it is, there wouldn't be a problem. They'd be happy. So can you see what happens? Through the development of wisdom, your compassion grows. And then you think, well, I'm going to stick with this Vipassana business because it's obviously working. So it goes back the other way. You find that your understanding of suffering increases because you can see it externally. And so you think, well, I'm going to continue with this Vipassana because it's leading me to greater and greater peace of mind. And you see that other people would benefit from it too, but you have the equanimity there to say, well, it's up to them. There's nothing I can do particularly. It's up to them. So that's where the compassion and the wisdom come together. That's my third sheet done. No, that was the third sheet. I'm at the end. Mindful at all times. Not. Okay. So with the only other thing to mention here is with enlightenment, then that understanding that the compassion size goes up a notch, because it's not that you want, it's not just that you want people to be free of suffering. It's that you actually understand what the problem really is, and that the wish is for beings to see the truth of things as they really are. Because you know that if only they would see that, they would be perfectly at peace. Perfectly at peace. Thank you.